addressing the shortage of police recruits in Maine and across the nation. It is a nationwide problem that affects all kinds of communities, from large cities to small towns. Police departments can't find enough qualified recruits to fill their ranks. Here, the Maine Criminal Justice Academy website is currently advertising job openings for more than 24 law enforcement agencies, and that doesn't even represent all of the vacancies. Some departments are down 10, 15, even 20% in staffing. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will examine some of the reasons behind this police shortage, from pay to morale. We'll look at how it's affecting police departments and the communities they serve. And we'll discuss some of the creative solutions towns are trying, from bonuses to video productions, and whether they are working. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Police departments across Maine are having trouble finding enough officers to fill their ranks. It is a nationwide problem. In fact, it's everywhere. But why? We'll learn about the reasons for the shortage, how it is affecting police forces and the communities they serve. With us today in our studio, Mike Soschuk, Chief of Police for the Portland Police Department. Paul Gaspar is Executive Director of the Maine Association of Police. And Jim Messerschmidt is Chair of the Criminology Department at the University of Southern Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you thought about a career in law enforcement? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Jim, I'm going to start with you. Give us an outline of this problem. How severe is the shortage, both here in Maine and nationwide?
Well, I think it's more severe than it has been in the past. And I think that what is happening is that there's a lot of competition going on for, you know, better paying jobs. There's been new jobs added to the economy with higher pay, what may be called better working conditions. This means more career choices for especially young people, millennials, who are, considering what career to take. Salaries and benefits have clearly declined in many police departments across the country. Cities and towns are devoting money to other areas rather than to police. It's not an 8-to-5 job with weekends off that most people prefer for a lot of police officers. When that kind of thing happens, young people seek other positions.
Chief, what are you looking at the Portland Police Department? How many positions do you have open?
So we have 166 sworn police officers, and we're actually 16 short right now. And that's a major
16 short, 10% of your force.
Yeah, absolutely. When you describe it as a severe issue, it certainly is right here in our backyard. And, you know, and I read articles every day around the country where this is impacting the entire profession of law enforcement. And it's unfortunate, to say the least.
So what are you doing? Are officers working extra hours?
Yeah, so we have some flexibility around how we accomplish the mission. Obviously, our priority here is making sure that the city of Portland is safe and all of our residents are safe. So we're always going to put our resources towards that. And I think we do an effective job on that day in and day out. But for us, we've done a lot of work around recruiting. As a matter of fact, today we put out a press release that talked about a full-time recruiting officer. To my knowledge, is the first one in the state of Maine that's doing nothing but recruiting on behalf of the Portland Police Department.
So are you advertising for that job, or have you identified someone within the department for that job?
We've filled somebody internally,
okay,
yeah.
Okay,
so
yeah.
Kate Phelan does a great job for us, and that position is going to be looking at everything from social media to face-to-face contacts to working with classes. Could be sitting in this room with you at some point having a conversation, going out and really, really talking up the Portland Police Department and our profession.
Paul, you talk to officers statewide. What is this doing to them? Are we talking, I'm guessing, more overtime, more stress? Is that the case?
Yes, I believe that, and you know, this is a confluence of events nationwide for our profession, but it, as the chief has said, Maine is not immune from that. And, you know, we have situations where 10, 15 years ago, to be down a position or two was not abnormal. But we have examples where we're losing 40 to 50% of a department through either retirement or attrition and not being able to fill those positions. So the men and women that remain are heavily taxed, meaning overtime, which leads to fatigue, which leads to other issues. But the one thing I can say, my experience in Maine, is that our police officers go to work every day and they try to do the best that they can because they know they have a huge responsibility.
Joining me now on the line, A.J. Higgins, statewide news reporter for Maine Public. A.J.'s been working on a story about this very issue. Thanks for joining us, A.J.
Well, thank you.
And so why don't you join in here? As you've been talking to different departments around the state, what are you hearing? How big of a challenge is this?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's an issue of pay. Here in Maine, our statewide average for incoming officers is between $16.50 and $20 an hour, with $20 being on the high end. When you compare that with a national average, officers are earning, on average, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics Occupational Employment Statistics Survey in 2015, they were earning an average of about $60,000 a year, or more than just about double what the starting pay is here in Maine.
Wow. What kind of solutions are you seeing? I think you just heard Chief Soschek say just today they're announcing a recruitment officer at the Portland Police Department. What are other departments doing to try to bring in more young people or people in general?
Those that can afford it, Jennifer, are trying to offer sign-on bonuses, which are effective. But a lot of departments can't do that. And one of the departments that has been hardest hit in terms of recruitment is the Washington County Sheriff's Department. They seem to be continually looking for people, although at the moment I think they're doing pretty well. I spoke with the chief deputy the other day. But at that department, they're taking people who are coming in and trying to match their benefit levels from the departments that they're coming from, for instance, so that they don't have to give up benefits such as additional vacation time, et cetera. Another plan that they've undertaken in Washington County has to do with identifying younger people in the high school level who may have an interest in staying in the community and working in law enforcement. And they're grooming these young people, bringing them in as reserve officers and steering them towards a law enforcement career. And then they can hire them. And that has also worked out pretty well to Washington County's benefit.
I understand that in your reporting you spoke with a young recruit. What was his or her reasons for joining the police force?
You know, I think that any chief who could have talked to Adam Oko up in Orono would be pretty impressed with this young man. I don't think that on a personal level he was really excited about what his starting pay was, but he made a point of telling me that that is not why he got into this line of work, that he wants to give back to the community, he wants to help to the community, and he really has a personal investment in law enforcement. And I think when you dig beneath the surface of why a lot of people go into this profession, that's probably what you're going to find.
Well, thank you, A.J. That was A.J. Higgins, Maine Public statewide news report, and you can hear his story tonight at 5:30 on Maine Things Considered. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I appreciate the things that I've said already and what other people are saying about salaries and benefits, but I want to push the conversation a little bit because there's other issues that I think that need to be discussed. One, of course, is the negativity surrounding police violence that has occurred across the country, you know, with regards to numerous high-profile cases of police violence, and then the associated kind of community unrest with those police violence, which has sparked, for instance, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement as an example. And so because of these, what we've seen is somewhat of a dramatic decline in the confidence in the police, especially in Black communities.
Sure. I mean, I read a Gallup poll that's from 2015, 22-year low in confidence in the police.
Yeah.
So why, if I'm a young person, do I want to do a job that I'm not going to be paid well for, is dangerous, and people might not like me very much? So, Chief Soschuk, give me your pitch. I'm 18 years old and trying to figure out what to do with my life. How do you counter that?
Yeah, I think that AJ certainly touched on a few good points. You know, for us, it's not an interview question answer to say, I want to help people, right? And everybody asks that. So what brought you into this field? That's really the truth. If you want to actually have an opportunity to make a difference, short term, real time, right now in somebody's living room, you have the opportunity to do that. You want to make a long term difference for a community or a family or an individual, you have the opportunity to do that. It's an honor and it's a privilege to do this work. And we talk about callings. We don't talk about a profession or a job. It's something that we're drawn to because we truly want to help people. I do think there's some of this that's generational, truth be told, I'm a poor negotiator. I never knew what I was going to get paid at the Portland Police Department from day one. I didn't care. I wanted to be a cop in the city of Portland. I did my research. This is where I wanted to be. This is where I'm still at. And I'm proud to be here. I do think that Professor Messerschmidt touched on some topics that are incredibly important, that as a profession, we need to own the fact that we've made mistakes. And in 2018, any of those mistakes are going to be far more visible than they've ever been before. But the vast, vast, vast majority of communities support their law enforcement officers because their law enforcement officers certainly support them. And I think the city of Portland supports our police department, hands down. And you're always going to have a percentage that doesn't. But it's up to me as the chief of this agency to lead and try to build trust and relationships. That's the cornerstone of what we do. Whether we're trying to hire kids out of high school and we're talking about, oh, come back and see us for four or five years down the road, or talking to neighborhoods about any issue that we deal with. It always comes back to trust and relationships. If you don't have that, you can have local discord, which Jim touched on.
You know, some of the issues here in Maine relate to the national issues, but I think some of them are, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, some of them might be specific to Maine. And Paul, I know that a couple years ago, Maine State Police were able to give a raise, a significant raise, to be able to recruit more officers to their ranks. Did that have a domino effect for other departments throughout the state?
It absolutely did, and I think that you know, the uniqueness with the contract with the state police is that because it's garnered by the legislature, it's usually very long periods of time between those events. So when they do manage to negotiate a raise, it in the aggregate looks very large. And I know Chief Hathaway, who may be joining us later, will probably echo this, is that for those folks in those regions, they use that as a bellwether. And in some cases, people received up to 18% raises, which, you know, since 2008, for us as an organization that negotiates contracts, we're overwhelmed with getting 1.5% or 2% right after 2008 as far as a raise because of the economy.
What's one thing that is interesting to me about this is it seems as though it's happened really quickly. I remember, and I don't have the best memory for time, Chief, but I think it was within the last decade as a reporter covering a ceremony for the swearing in new officers at Portland Police Department. Not only were these, was it a full class, but these were really impressive young people that had their pick of any career. These are people who'd served in the military. These are people who spoke multiple languages, college degrees. And in my mind, that feels like yesterday.
Well, time flies, that's for sure. And I think that, as an example, we hire less than 4% of the people that apply to be Portland police officers. It's always going to be quality over quantity. And that doesn't matter. I could come in next week and say we're 20 down, or it's always going to be quality over quantity. And it has to be that. And it has to be that because the position is such that we put so much trust and discretion in the hands of our officers that you've got to take the best of the best. There's no question about it. And I'll tell you that 21 years ago or something, when I applied to be a Portland police officer, there's 500 people going into a gym at a local middle school. Everybody's wearing suits. They're going in. They're taking a test. And they're really pushing hard. Nowadays, we may test, 20 times a year, 10 or 12 officers at a time, computer-based. And if there's five people coming in, we'll test you. If there's two people coming in, we'll test you. We're not going to wait to do that. And that really comes down to changes that we've made in hiring processes to make things smoother. And to be quite frank, we talk about the state police. We're all competing against each other for these high, top quality candidates. And there's going to be a piece of it, which is salary and benefits and the way that they're treated and the way we communicate with our candidates. It's required us to be better employers, and we should be. These positions are incredibly important, and these officers need to be respected at all levels.
Yeah, let me kind of bring us back for a moment to the violence issue because, and I'm talking on the national level. I think Jennifer, you're right that there is a difference between what's going on in Maine and Portland compared to other parts of the country. But there has been somewhat of a dramatic increase of police violence against civilians and police killings of civilians. And the last 3 years, for instance, it's been very close to 1,000 people each year being killed by the police, civilians killed by the police. And already this year it's up to 230, and it's keeping that. And so what we see in particular is that black males are approximately one quarter of all people killed by the police, but they're only 6% of the population. And that has made it difficult to recruit, for instance, racial minorities into police departments because of that high level. And let me add one other thing that I think that is very important that I'm hearing from my students, and that is the ongoing militarization of the police that has been taking place.
What do you mean by that, the ongoing militarization of the police?
Yeah, what's been happening since really the 1990s is an increase in the police use of military equipment and military kinds of tactics. Police departments are actually using armored personnel carriers, automatic rifles, grenade launchers. They're using SWAT teams more and more.
These things aren't being used in Maine, people are watching the national news and they have a sense.
Exactly, yeah. And also what it does is it leads to an aggressive style of law enforcement, what I like to call a militarized masculinity of police officers, if you will. And, academic studies show that police departments that use military equipment and tactics are more likely to have violent encounters with the public, regardless of the local crime rate. Okay. And what this does is this creates a shift in the culture of policing to more kinds of direct repression rather than, a culture of helping that Michael was talking about. And that makes policing less appealing to a large number of young people. And I'm actually hearing these kinds of comments from my students. I haven't noticed less students in the criminology program at USM, less of them wanting to become police officers, but I have heard of them being concerned about this kind of change.
Sure, it's
in the culture.
It's
of
national
policing.
Conversation.
Yeah.
Chief Soschuk, no matter what you do at the Portland Police Department, this is going on in other places.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, you can say that for any profession, right? So if a police officer does something wrong, stupid, unethical, criminal on the West Coast. Anybody that's wearing a uniform is going to wear that the next day. And I think that's the same case whether you're a professor or an attorney or a doctor or a politician. That's definitely the case nowadays. But myself and the professor have had a conversation about this at USM around the militarization. And police officers would look back to the North Hollywood shootout, which was a bank robbery with machine guns and bad guys wearing armor from head to toe, and police officers running down the streets to pawn shops to get weapons to actually defend themselves and defend their public, because they were outgunned. They were outarmed, and these individuals were there, and they shot a multitude of police officers and thousands of rounds in that one scenario. I would argue that police departments and communities, if you want to talk about militarization, I think the school in Parkland wished they had the proper weaponry to respond back to what happened in that community. And I think there's aggressive criminality that we are responding to with tactics and with equipment, to be quite frank. And I'm very comfortable with that.
We do have to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to go to your comments and questions. We're talking about the police shortage here in Maine and across the nation. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, dedicated to helping homeowners qualify for Efficiency Maine Energy Audit and Insulation Rebates. More at evergreenyourhome.com. Green Hut Galleries in Portland. For 40 years, exhibiting contemporary art and sculpture by Maine artists, greenhutgalleries.com. And the Lunder Foundation, founding partner of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical.
On the next Fresh Air, comic and Daily Show correspondent Roy Wood Jr. He also hosts the Comedy Central storytelling series This Is Not Happening and recently had a stand-up special.
But if we get rid of the Confederate flag... How am I gonna know who the dangerous white people are?
Join us.
Fresh Air is tonight at 7 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. Starting at 5 each weekday evening, Maine Public Television brings you 3 hours of in-depth quality public affairs programming. First at 5 o'clock, it's Amanpour on PBS, delving into the top issues of the day. Followed by the Journal from Deutsche Welle at 5:30 with an international and European focus on world events and issues. Next comes the BBC World News at 6, then the Nightly Business Report at 6:30, and finally the PBS NewsHour at 7. 5 to 8 each weekday evening, it's news you can trust on Maine Public Television.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the police shortage in Maine. Joining me in our studio, Paul Gaspar, Executive Director of the Maine Association of Police, Professor Jim Messerschmidt, Chair of USM's Criminology Department, and Michael Soschuk, who is Portland's Police Chief. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now is Audra Kaler-Bell. She is town manager in Camden. Thanks for joining us, Audrey. Audra?
Yes, Audra. Yes, thank you, Jennifer.
What are you seeing in Camden? What's going on there as far as the police department?
So Camden's very fortunate. We're a town that highly values our police as well as other municipal employees. So we're fortunate that we pay well. We have excellent benefits for employees. We have an excellent chief of police, Randy Gagne. I'd also like to say I was the interim city manager in Rockland, where I worked with Bruce Boucher, who was also an excellent police chief. So given, you know, Randy's skill in managing his department and his, you know, ability to attract people with decent pay and good benefits, Camden's been very fortunate that we've been able to fill a lot of vacancies that other towns are struggling to fill.
All right. Well, I understand you and your town are participating in a new video project with the Maine Municipal Association. Tell me about it.
Yes. So I participated in Hometown Careers with MMA, and it's really focused on trying to attract younger people to careers in local government. Of course, you know, we're talking about the police shortage today, and that's a career that, you know, that campaign did a lot to try to bring awareness to and you know, make younger people aware that that's an opportunity for them.
All right. Well, thank you, Audra. Audra Kaler-Bell is Camden's town manager. Before I go to more calls, though, I want to ask you all sort of the big question here. If we're looking at things like Chief Soscheck, your department down 10%, other departments down 40, 50%, are we less safe right now than we could be?
Well, I'll take a shot. Having worked with departments who are experiencing large shortages, and they are smaller departments, the quick answer is no. I think people should still have confidence in their local departments. What it will mean is that a lot of the ancillary things that police departments do, such as active community policing, those things may take a sideline for a while.
So the very things that make people feel better about the police department, like community policing, may take a back seat.
Correct, because, and I'm sure the chief will chime in, you know, at the end of the day, when you've exhausted all of your resources, and I go back to this confluence events, if you look at the state of New Jersey, in which their financial troubles were so bad, you look at cities like Newark and Jersey City, who laid off over 50% of their department, but still provided police services, our initial directive is life and property, making sure that people are safe, free from victimization, and the ancillary things sometimes will take a hit for that.
Go ahead, Professor.
Yeah, I think we have to recognize that the criminological research is quite clear on this, and that is that there's no quantifiable relationship between the number of police officers and crime. Crime is related to social conditions. It's not related to the number of officers in a police department. Now, clearly, each community needs a number of, you know, a certain level of police to adequately respond to citizen need. But since 1991, the violent crime rate has fallen by 49%. And the property crime rate has fallen by 52%, while at the same time the number of police have been going down. And what criminologists argue, and there's, you know, I could go on and on about this, but, you know, one of the main reasons for the drop in the crime rate has been the aging population, for instance. Especially the decline in those individuals who are at the prime, what we would call the prime crime age, you know, 15 to 29 years old.
Sure. So Maine's aging population
we're experiencing that at the university too. You know, less students coming to USM. But also, there's been a decrease in unemployment. There's been an increase in per capita income. And, you know, there are certain kinds of policies, though, that police departments have adopted, which do help to lower the crime rate, such as CompStat. And maybe Michael and Paul know about that. Maybe they implement it, too. But that's proven to be a very effective form of policing. And what that involves, CompStat refers to comparative statistics. And what happens is that a police department will gather and analyze crime data, you know, where crime is taking place in a community.
Sure. Instead of being intuitive, look at the statistics. I know that the Portland Police Department either has that program or one similar. I've seen it in action. Mike, is that, you know, it helps balance out the shortage of officers, right?
Yeah, without question. I would agree with the professor in saying that the unfortunate reality around the world is that law enforcement exists because people end up filtering through all the other societal systems that are meant to really support us. And some of that can be social service and education. And when those things fail, law enforcement in many cases is the one standing at the bottom of that at 3 a.m. in the morning with a net saying, we're here to help you. What can we do? So some of the things that are out there, we talk about We're emergency responders first and foremost. So those 911 calls, we're always going to focus on those issues and make people safe. And as Paul had stated, sometimes those ancillary issues aren't properly dealt with or dealt with in a timely fashion when your staffing starts to get low. But I think what we've seen around the reduction in crime, violent and property, can go back to evidence-based practices. You know, using data sharing. We've had a CompStat model for the last 9 years at the Portland Police Department. I think it's been very, very valuable for us. There's different approaches to that. Some that have gotten departments in trouble, not us, thankfully. We use it as a communication tool in sharing information. I think community policing has been great. As Jim had said, you talk about starts time frame at like 91 or so. Community policing is programming, not a mindset, but an actual system, a culture of the way we do business. All those things have had positive impacts. Hotspot programs and all those things, so that we're not just throwing bodies at issues. We're actually researching and making conscious decision about what we're going to do with increasingly limited resources.
We'll go to Alex, who's calling from Portland. Alex, I know you've been waiting a long time. Go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to be a police officer for a pretty long time, and the only thing that deterred me was the no marijuana policy, like no medical marijuana, I'm pretty sure. And I'm just wondering if police ever plan on not being ignorant.
Well, that's a great question. And I think that as a profession, we've certainly evolved as well. As our citizens, as our residents have made decisions, we've got to remember that up until very recently, it was a crime, right, to possess marijuana. So it's very difficult for us to say, oh, geez, well, come on in. You're committing a crime on a regular basis. We want you to enforce the law. But what we've done, I can tell you ourselves internally, is we've changed the civil service statutes around that, where we don't have automatic disqualifiers that said if you use marijuana in the last 5 years, you're out, because I think that's a poor way to do business. We're looking at frequency and recency. So if you're smoking marijuana in the parking lot before you come in to take your test, that's probably not going to work out for you. But if it's something that you did a couple times or you did a bunch of times and it was a few years ago and you've drawn that line in the sand to say, geez, I'm going to do a different thing with my life. I want to enforce the law and I'm going to abide by our community rule. Then that's what we're looking for. So I think we've been flexible around that. When in the past there was a very hard line at 5 years, and that was just the way it was going to be. And I think that's a poor way to do business, and I think we've learned that lesson.
All right, Alex, thanks for your question. We'll go to Mount Vernon and Doug. Hi, Doug. Go ahead.
Hi there. I have a lot of friends that were cops. They still are, but what they've chosen is they've gone through the academy. They've worked for local or state or county PDs and sheriff's departments for 5 to 6 years. And then they get a much better offer from, like, a federal department, whether that be FPS or Border Patrol. And it's hard to compete, I think, with what they're offering. I know some of these guys went from making, you know, $50,000 a year, working 60 hours a week, you know, no weekends, all nights, to Monday through Friday, 7 to 3, making, you know, close to $60,000-$75,000 a year for their basic level, you know, stuff. That's before they get accepted into special agent positions or inspector positions.
Well, Doug, the whole time you've been talking, Paul's been nodding. So, Paul, I'm going to let you respond.
Well, sure. And I think it's very hard to compete with a conglomerate, which is what I consider the federal government. As one who negotiates contracts in 53 different municipalities, including Portland, there's very few instances of apples to apples, meaning every municipality is garnered by their own ability to pay in their budgets, whether it be police, fire, public works, where the government is putting out these huge things. The example that I use is I worked for U.S. Customs, and if I had stayed with them versus taking this position, I'd be making close to $85,000 base salary. But it would mean that you would have a different opportunity. I would probably be at the border in Calais, and those are all things to look at. But when you're already domiciled in those places, you know, something like Border Patrol is a tough thing to turn down because they have a defined pension plan. They do pay well. There are incentives and abilities to move up. And what people have to remember when you look at all of these things about whether, especially about marijuana and all of those other things, is that of the 135 municipalities in Maine, the one basis of rule is state statute and the academy, the Maine Criminal Justice Academy, as to how we comport ourselves. And I think we do see a lot of intermovement now because those people are far and few between.
Doug, thanks for your call. We do have to take another quick break. Before we do so, a word about tomorrow's show. Join us for a discussion about the book, The Hungry Brain, and why it's so hard to lose weight. We'll have the author on. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Freemasons in Maine, supporting Maine Public Radio's efforts to provide knowledge, wisdom, and entertainment to the people of Maine. And Camp Alsing, a Maine summer camp for kids with high-functioning autism and other social challenges. CampAlsing.com.
This Saturday is March for Our Lives, a national day of action inspired by students who demand we make their safety a priority in this age of mass school shootings. I'm Brian Lehrer from WNYC. Join me and public radio reporters across the country for live special coverage as teenagers and their supporters take to America's streets to protest. Tune in, and if you're marching, call in.
You can join us for that special broadcast this coming Saturday at 12 noon. We hope you'll stay with us at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling today for the Commonwealth Club of California. On today's show, the mayors of Miami, Houston, and Columbia, South Carolina discuss their city's issues with climate change and the political upheaval in the country. That's coming up on the Commonwealth Club of California in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what to do about the police shortage in Maine. With me today, Jim Messerschmidt, who is chair of USM's Criminology Department, Michael Soschuk, Portland Police Chief, and Paul Gaspar, Executive Director of the Maine Association of Police. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Joining me on the line, Mark Hathaway, who is Police Chief in Bangor. Thanks for joining us, Chief Hathaway.
Yes, ma'am.
What are you facing in Bangor? Do you see the same kind of challenges that we see here in Portland?
Well, you know, in our region, we have struggled over the past 2 or 3 years. I think we're slowly improving at the moment. I do appreciate Chief Soschuk's challenges. By example, we're exactly half the size of his department, and we were down 11 just over 3 years ago. And we've hired 19 new officers in the past 24 months. We're only down 4, which is very manageable.
How have you managed to find 19 people to hire who meet those qualifications?
Well, we're doing the same thing everybody is. I mean, the challenge here for everybody is police departments across Maine are in an increasingly awkward position of competing with each other. And we're all trying to find the best candidate. We're doing the same things, job fairs, social media. We present at local universities and community colleges. We are very aggressive. We go out and go after folks. We're always selling our department. We offer officers here. If they bring somebody into us, if we hire somebody, we offer them a finder's fee. We're doing all the creative things everybody is doing. I like what Portland's doing. I think having somebody dedicated to this is a fantastic idea. We don't need to do that right now, but if we get down to 11 short for us is almost nearly impossible to staff patrol cars. 4 down is very manageable.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to call in. That was Chief Mark Hathaway with the Bangor Police Department. We're going to move to Maria, calling from Westbrook. Hi, Maria. Go ahead.
Hi. I guess just listening to this show, and I had some comments I wanted to make as well, but, you know, we're talking about the national issues as if they're not taking place in Maine, and police violence is very much taking place in Maine, and Portland particularly. I think that, you know, Chief Baker and his family don't feel like they're supported by Portland police, certainly. He was murdered in 2016 by police in Portland and acquitted by Janet Mills, the police officer that did that. And so, you know, I also know that, for example, the Bangor Police Department has recently purchased a military-style tank. So I'm wondering, you know, with the national conversations that are happening, these things are definitely happening all over Maine as well. And so I just wanted to raise that. But also, you know, that there are community efforts happening where folks are getting trained on first aid and conflict resolution and various other methods to, you know, avoid policing and interacting with police departments. And to support our communities in a different way with much less violence and hold each other accountable and create, you know, safe communities where everyone can truly thrive.
Chief?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I think one of the things that we preach on a regular basis and then we specifically hire for are communication skills. That's the number one thing that we're looking for in our officers. I will tell you that I think law enforcement in this state is leading the charge around things around the opioid epidemic, as an example, and mental health issues, and all of those kind of things. I would say that the word of the day in 2018 is diversion. We want to divert people out of criminal justice system. We want to divert people out of hospital ERs. We want to divert people out of homeless shelters. So my goal, my mission is to put people on a long-term path to health and wellness. If that, in fact, happens, then we're not going to deal with people when they're in the midst of a crisis and having a tough time. I would completely disagree with Maria's characterization of what happened with Mr. Baker. I think the Attorney General's report speaks volumes to what actually happened. As somebody that responded to that scene, somebody who's read that investigation, somebody who knows the officer in question, I think that officer was put in an impossible situation. A tragedy occurred, but he did what he was supposed to do. It's unfortunate all the way around that the Portland Police Department can be one of now 10 national learning sites with the way we deal with people that are in the midst of a mental health crisis. But yet we still find ourselves in these situations. And I would point back again to society and say, how are these people on the street and how are we failing them long before they come in contact with law enforcement? And I would say long before they come in contact with law enforcement in a busy urban parking lot surrounded by tens of people carrying what we ultimately find out is a realistic BB gun. There's no way for that officer to know that from that distance. And he did what he was supposed to do. And while it's a tragedy, I support Sergeant Nick Goodwin completely with what he did that day. And he will have to be faced with that for the rest of his life, what he was forced to do in that set of circumstances. So I appreciate the comments and the questions, but I would have to disagree completely with that.
Jim?
Yeah, let me even broaden the conversation a little bit further and look at the U.S. in relation to other countries, in particular in Europe, and bringing it back to this notion of social conditions that I've been talking about that that lead to crime. As we all know, the U.S. relative to other countries has very high levels of homelessness, has very high levels of social marginality, of extreme economic deprivation, you know, that far exceeds most other industrialized societies. And it's those kinds of social conditions that actually breed crime and violence. For instance, even though the crime rate has gone down, the violent crime rate in the U.S., we still have the highest violent crime rate in industrialized societies because of these social conditions. For instance, the risk of dying from violence in the U.S. is approximately 10 times higher than it is in Germany and Austria. It's 12 times higher than in the United Kingdom, and it's 16 times higher than in Norway. The social conditions that breed violence are mitigated in these societies through welfare state kinds of policies, you know, such as universal health care, universal child care, welfare for all in need, housing for all, low unemployment, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they maintain welfare kinds of policies. And it's these kinds of policies that significantly reduce the social conditions that that foster crime and violence. And these social conditions also correlate with, you know, violence by the police, as an example. You know, connecting it to the last caller. You know, I noted earlier that in the U.S., the police kill almost 1,000 U.S. citizens a year. In Germany, it's less than 10 citizens a year. In Austria and in the U.K., it's less than 5 a year. And we all know that the police in the U.K. do not even wear guns.
Don't even carry guns. Entirely different.
And in Norway, they've only had 2 police killings of civilians in the last 10 years.
Maria, thanks so much for your call. Moving on to Portland and Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. My father was a career police officer, and I was just visiting with him, and he told me a story. My father started off as a patrolman in the New York City Police Department and became eventually the chief of police. And he told me a story of, just the other day, of how he almost quit after a couple of weeks. And he told me the pay was really low and they got no overtime and he didn't have a car and he had to depend on the bus service, and it was the winter conditions in New York City and the buses weren't working right. And he said, I almost quit. And he said, then one day he was at work and he had befriended this man who was deaf, dumb, and blind, and he had a companion that someone paid for so he could help, so he could attend college. And that man and he were walking across the street, and the man was struck by a bus. And the man, who couldn't speak or hear, was totally lost and didn't know what was going on. And my father got to the scene, and he said, I don't know how I can help this man, and I want to. He knew him, and he wanted to help him. And he said, all of a sudden, I remembered, and I took his hand, and I put it on my shield. And he said, instantly, I could see relief on his face. And he said, right then and there, I knew I wanted to be a policeman for the rest of my life.
Nancy, what a nice story. And Paul, you're smiling.
Yeah, I mean, it just blows me away. Thank you so much, Nancy, for that story and for your dad's service. I just have to say in the quick minute that I meet and work with police officers throughout the state of Maine. We have 1,000 members, but I also meet and speak with officers throughout the country. And I can say without equivocation that the men and women who are in this profession today are proud to walk in people like your father's footsteps and share the same views. I have yet to meet an officer that comes into work and says, geez, I hope I get to use deadly force today. That never happens. And a lot of it goes to, you know, we are the victim of our own kind of societal views of things where police kill an individual. Well, police use deadly force. To say police kill intimates some type of intent to go out and do harm, and I don't think that that's the case at all. You know, and I often say, much like the legislature, we're the end users of the sausage that is made in Augusta, and it usually comes to the test on the side of the road at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, let me add to that. I would agree with that, you know, to a certain extent. And when I talk about social conditions, I want people to understand that I actually sympathize very much with the police. I wanted to be a cop at one time. And, you know, the point of emphasizing the social conditions is that those social conditions impact not only citizens but also the police. And so what those social conditions create, and we can understand this by relating it to other societies, is that it creates a situation in this country where we have a battle going on, a very violent battle going on between citizens in primarily urban environments and the police, and the police having to respond to these high levels of violence and crime. And they increasingly use, you know, this militarized form of policing. And so it creates an ever-present cycle. And so if we want to make things better for both civilians and police, We need to change the social conditions. That's my point.
Nancy, thanks for your call. Trying to squeeze in one or two more. We're going to go to Patrick from Old Orchard Beach. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I appreciate the conversation, and I'm speaking from a place where I was raised by a cop, but I also became sort of a kind of wandering musician for a while with all the sort of sideline things that might entail. I appreciate that you guys brought in the conversation already about, like, the changing social standards. And I just want to throw out there that those of us who, including myself, do have sort of complaints about the way things have been run and certain things that have come up, that this is people's chance and our chance in a way. It sounds like y'all have opened the door for it to kind of step up and shape that change and to shape the solution to our own complaints within the way our system is running, because we are the ones that are running it. That's what I want to say. Thank you.
All right. Lots of people nodding in the studio here. Email from Athena. Exploring is a Learning for Life program through the Boy Scouts of America. Locally, the Pine Tree Council serves the lower 10 counties in Maine, and Katahdin area serves down east in northern Maine. Law enforcement explorer posts are co-ed high school programs that get hands-on, on-site experience with law enforcement career. Police departments partner with Learning for Life through a Boy Scout Council, receive training for running the youth program, recognition, and awards. I know Athena also posted something on our Facebook page. So if you're with a police department, you're listening, you can find information about that. Chief, I know the Portland Police Department has a program for teenagers, doesn't it?
Yeah, we had an Explorer program for quite a few years, and it was great. We have moved beyond that to a SEALS Fit program, which is, again, aimed at youth in partnership with the Maine Leadership Institute. And really, that's a personal development, kind of life experiences approach, where we combine physical fitness and all the positive things around that with experiential learning and working together in teams. And it does everything from looking somebody in the eye when you have a conversation and how to give a handshake, right straight through bullying and life lessons and implicit bias and some very broad and important dynamic conversations. And
so
I think
how many
great.
Of kids have come through the young, whether it's Explorer or the newer program, and ended up on the force?
Well, the unfortunate reality is that because of the age, I think we're still waiting to see the benefits of that program, because you get them as they're sophomores in high school and you may have to wait 5 or 6 years. But the SEALS Fit program, as an example, has graduated 10 classes. I think about 80% of those have been people of color that are living in the city of Portland. Again, an opportunity for us to build trust and relationships with everyone. And the kids rave about that program. And truth be told, like any other program, the officers act as mentors, and we learn so much more from the youth than they probably do from us. But it's a powerful event, and everybody really has a good time with that.
Well, thank you. That's going to be our last word. That was Chief Michael Soschuk, Chief of the Portland Police Department. Also here, Paul Gaspar, Executive Director of the Maine Association of Police, and Professor Jim Messerschmidt, Chair of the Criminology Department at USM. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.